This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It is 8 minutes after 10 o'clock. You're still listening to Power Talk with me, Aldrin St-Pierre. So next we are going to be focusing on the profession of internal auditors and some of the challenges that they are currently facing. And this, of course, emanates from a conversation that we had last week where we were focusing on the risks of working for the public sector, working in the public sector, and whether or not it does amount to career suicide or could amount to career suicide. So the tweet that we got was from Bauer M or Bauer Makwati. And I'll read that tweet. Let me just quickly introduce my guest. So we will be joined by Julius Mujabilo, who is the CEO of the Institute of Internal Auditors of South Africa. We also have Malifetsani Mutlokwana, who is a practicing internal auditor and MD at Lilodi Governance Solutions Africa. And then Sakumzi Somyo, chairperson of the Standing Committee of the AG, is also joining us for this conversation. We're also taking your calls on 0861-987-000, your tweets at Aldrin St-Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also you can tweet at PowerFM 987. So that tweet that I got from Bauer Makwati reads as follows. And remember that last week we had Mpo on the show, and Mpo said, unfortunately, there are just some careers that come with their own risks, and one of them being an internal auditor. So Bauer, in agreement with Mpo, says, I agree, Mpo is right. I recently resigned from a public entity because I was being forced to approve payments, which was not comfortable with me. My refusal made me an organizational enemy. Number one, as a qualified professional, I was not going to compromise my integrity. And then in another tweet as well, he went on to speak about a friend of his who was killed because the friend, I have audited government departments, entities and municipalities. It's a mess. The level of political interference and nepotism makes it difficult for professionals to function at the optimum level. My friend was killed in one of the audits for identifying supply chain management irregularities. So, let's start off here. Malifetsani, good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, Adrian.
Sure. Let's start off just your remarks to this tweet, these tweets that I've just read at the moment, and whether it comes as a surprise at all.
Not at all. It is something that is really quite prevalent. You know, in my experience as a professional internal auditor, I have come to see quite a number of horrid stories. Things that, you know, if internal auditors in South Africa were not strong people by character, you'd actually not have this profession existing. So what you get, you know, Arjun, is there are systemic ways of victimizing internal auditors, you know, such that an internal auditor can get fired. And you know, when you look at it, all processes, all protocols have actually been followed by those who would actually be executing this gruesome deed. And you know, internal auditors are not, you know, 100% absolutely perfect people. They are human beings like anyone, person. So you would find that very minor things can actually be, you know, just blown out of proportion, just to make sure that an internal auditor is pushed out of the way. If you are
pushed out of the way by who?
You know, it can be management. It can actually be, you know, some scrupulous or unscrupulous members of your oversight structures like the board and audit committee. Mm-hmm. So maybe for you to understand this, let me just, you know, share some of my, you know, experiences with you. I was a young...
Okay, Malifetsani, sorry, just quickly hold on there. I understand that Sakumzi has to rush off to another meeting. Sakumzi being the chairperson of the Standing Committee of the AG. Apologies for that, Malifetsani. Sakumzi, just quickly, your response to the tweet that I just read and whether or not it is... it comes as a surprise, but also on the other end, what measures are being put in place?
Well, thank you very much for the question. I've heard your the tweet as part of reference.
Mm.
It's indeed one of the unfortunate scenarios of late wherein auditors would find themselves threatened in their own work environment. As the committee of Parliament, we have noted this through the report of the Auditor General last year. And through that, there's been a reference to specific institutions who are affected, inclusive of municipalities and some of the departments. And we thought it will serve the purpose to invite the head of the South African police services with his team, represented by provincial commissioners and the Auditor General and some municipalities, where we had to listen to such effects, and we had to somewhat read some form of right act to ensure that public entities should, in receipt of their own allocations from the public fiscus, they ought to observe the requirements of the law. One of those, that they should be audited on particular intervals, and there's no way that they would continue in a luxurious way to receive such allocations if they do not assist the fact that they must meet such requirements. And that assisted from our part, because we seek to ensure that the Office of the Auditor General functions unhindered and preserve its own independence in terms of creating such analysis on the actual spending, the management of public resources, and accountability of such. And we felt it prudent that we must somewhat talk to those who are affected and engage them through so they should understand the importance of value of protecting the Office of the Auditor General while it engages in their offices on such a kind of work. I hear now that the tweet has made reference to internal auditors who are part of a management of a specific institution,
yeah,
and therefore answerable to the accounting officer of such institution. They ought to ensure that they prevail in advising such institutions on the risks in as far as their ability to hold on the resources that they have. If they are threatened, they ought to protect them. If they can't operate, they ought to somewhat ensure that there's a level of protection that they receive. It's a very unfortunate scenario which should not be allowed in a democracy like ours. And therefore, it is a duty of those institutions to guarantee such protection on such individuals. And they would advise them whenever they identify or they feel that there is a risk somewhere. They must report such instances to the law enforcement so that they can quickly share such experiences and be provided some security advice or protection, even outside their own institution, on such money. It's very bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know that you have to run off, and I would have loved my guest to also engage you, but I understand that you have to leave. But that's fine. Yeah. But just a quick one then. With KPMG, the Auditor General had decided not to use the services of KPMG since 2018, April of 2018. Is there any intention that you know of that the Auditor General would be going back to KPMG to acquire its services?
Well, I'm not aware of any such instances, because we must take note of the fact that the credibility of that office is paramount.
Yeah.
And whatever it uses, whomever it approaches, must be guaranteed that it is indeed an institution which has 100% credibility, and therefore, whatever findings they make as the Auditor General are not going to be hindered by the fact that they have made use of those individuals or institutions which have their own credibility under check. It is very critical, even more after the amendments of the Public Audit Act, where there is a specific requirement of judgment. Well, I'm putting it in court of say judgment of an outlook when you deal with the audit, where you could find major irregularities which could be so material such that you issue some certificates against individuals for them to befall in the instance of guaranteeing that individual affected would have to face some level of accounting for his or her deeds. So you can't want to tamper with your credibility.
All right.
By misjudgment.
What would the attitude of the Standing Committee be if the Auditor General was to say that we will now acquire the services of KPMG again?
Well, in this point, we need to be very, very clear that our duty is to protect the office of the Auditor General, its own integrity, and if that is the case, then would somewhat be duty bound to rein on them if ever they make use of any institution with a standing which is a bit questionable.
What do you mean rein on them?
Will rein on them in the sense that would voice our discomfort on the usage of such institutions.
Okay, just a quick one. I'm going to ask Julius whether he has a question for you before you leave. Julius, good morning. Any questions for Sakumzi before he rushes off to his meeting?
No, good morning. No questions at this point. Thank
no
you
question.
Very much for the insight. Thank you.
Okay, then. Malifitane, any questions from your end?
Yeah, now I would like to know actually if at all there's any consideration in government to move internal audit out of, you know, departments and have an arrangement similar to that of the Auditor General. Because I believe that such a move could go a long way in terms of, you know, protecting the lives of, you know, internal audit practitioners in the public sector.
Okay. Sakumzi?
Well, the intention might not be to look into the matters of safety only. Is to look into the matters of independence of those who are doing work there. If you look into the main function of the internal audit, why they are in the internal environment, it's because they ought to provide that advice in time on any other thing which is a risk to that institution. And the Office of the Auditor General would have to look into a number of instances in terms of both expenditure and the outlook of accountability and management of such expenses as per receipts that they ought to look into. So the internal audit unit is phrased so because it is supposed to be internal. We don't have to solve matters in differing means because of particular consequential outcomes. There is a need of internal auditors, and they ought to remain as such, but we must ensure that in a categorized form, how can we create a standing standard that those who employ them must be accountable for them, must take responsibility, as it is the case for anyone who is employed in an institution. You see, that ought to be the case.
Okay.
It's a matter of for engagement, a matter that we ought to deal with and find a better way of how can we at best make such defiance.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Sakhumzi Somyo, the chairperson of the Standing Committee of the Auditor General. Malefitsane, let's go back to the anecdotes that you wanted to relay.
All right. If you allow me, Elden, there are just a couple of things that I need to deal with before I get into that. The first thing is, let's just do make a correction quickly. I'm from DOD, Governance Solutions, which in short is known as LGS Africa. And, you know, the second thing is the response that I just got with respect to moving internal audit out of, you know, the department is not something that is new in South Africa. You know, actually around 2005, 2009, there was what was called provincial internal audit in Mafikeng in the Northwest, which was structured exactly the same way as the Office of the Auditor General. And the internal auditors were assigned, you know, the portfolios of which department they would go and audit. They were still able to do both the audit work and provide consulting services. They were still able to walk the corridors because they would station there for carrying out their work. So I think both for independence and safety of internal audit, this is something that really needs to be taken very seriously. On to my experience, Elgin. I wanted to share, you know, with you that as a young chairperson of the audit committee, I, you know, saw a situation in which a chief internal auditor who was reporting to me lost his life only because he bumped onto a report which was hidden far away, a forensic audit report, which was conducted prior to him joining the municipality. And then, you know, by happenstance, he happened to lay his hands on it, and he started following it up. You know, yes, we do not have solid evidence that so-and-so was involved in killing this young man, but, you know, there was just a strong sense that there was definitely foul play in that. I have lost my job myself simply because I found myself picking up information that I was not actually supposed to have picked up. And having been working for an audit firm at the moment, you know, this situation got out of, you know, hand so much that it even involved the chairperson of the board coming in to get involved in operational matters and threatening the audit firm, which was my employer. And the audit firm, because they were scared of losing the contract, they fired. Simple. You know, a very popular story that you would be quite familiar with. When I was the chairperson of the audit committee at Nala Local Municipality, I was having as one of my members, the late Moss Chake, who, you know, was actually the chief audit executive of the Department of Agriculture.
Yeah.
And you know, if you really have been following the stories, that gentleman, who was a very talented fellow, died in a very gruesome way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Again, because it is suspected that he touched on that which was not supposed to have been touched, you know, by internal auditors. But
yeah,
our work does not actually have limitations, does not have boundaries. Right? We audit everything that we see as a high-risk area. But that in itself turns around and poses a greater risk, you know, to our
yep.
lives or even to our livelihoods as internal audit.
Okay. And Julius, in your report, actually, you also highlight the case of Moses Chake.
Yes. And this is a very sad discussion. I think we're having a very big indictment on how far we still have to go in improving governance in South Africa. And I must agree, this is a very dangerous space to play in the current environment that we are in. I think the focus of the discussion really is around what creates this incentive.
Yeah.
Because we have a system that is creating the incentives and pressures and
rationalization. Julius, I don't know if you have us on loudspeaker. The audio there isn't really great. So if you can take us off loudspeaker or just probably put the mouthpiece a bit closer to your mouth.
I hope it's much better now.
Much better. Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. No, I just removed my earphones.
Okay.
So I'm just saying we're in an environment really where there's enough incentives for people to do what we have here to make this situation very difficult. And as a result, you find that
taking these roles does become what you mentioned at the beginning, an issue of close to career suicide. So I think we need to get to a point where the discussion starts revolving around removing incentives. And the biggest point to remove incentives is what Malefetan talked to. It's around the independence of the oversight structure. Do we have the right oversight structures to make internal audit thrive?
Sorry, Julius, what do you mean by incentives?
We have incentives because the oversight structures that are overseeing internal audit are appointed by the politicians. We still have a bigger discussion in South Africa where we say, are politicians accountable to the whole country or to the political party members? And as things stand now, you get voted into a political party. The leaders of the political party appoint the governing body of the institution. The governing body of the institution appoint the oversight committees that are responsible for appointing and firing internal auditors. Mm. So it means as an internal auditor, if you upset the oversight structures that are loyal to the political party, your days are numbered in the organization, either physically or just being suspended, because our reports are highlighting some of those things. I mean, for example, in metros, in the plight of internal auditors, about 43% of CAE said they were intimidated, you know, and then some of the 33% in local government said they feared for their lives in raising these findings. So I think the bigger challenge is really whether we have the right environment. I think internal audit has been created as a tool for internal assurance building. It's not meant to be the same as external audit. Therefore, the positioning of the oversight structure determines the positioning of internal audit. So if we say we want to have an internal audit at provincial level, it means the oversight structure like an audit committee must be at a provincial level. If we have audit committee at an organizational level, the internal audit must follow suit and go at an organizational level. So the current challenge we have is the issue of independence, competence and accountability on the oversight structure. They are not at the right level to be able to create an environment where internal audit can discharge their duties fairly without any fear, without any intimidation at this point.
Okay, so when we come back, we're taking your calls on 0861-987-000. We'll also take some of your tweets as well at Aldrin Simpier, hashtag PowerTalk, and also you can tweet at PowerFM987. Let's have this conversation about the auditors and some of the threats that they face, but also, how do we get it right? How do we get it right? Because what Malefetsane is pointing out is also something that is in that book that I spoke about earlier on from Wiseman Nkohlu, the former chairperson of KPMG, that once you raise issues and the client, being the department, being the SOE, or being the private company, once you raise issues and you do not want to adhere to what the department, the SOE, or the client is saying, you could lose your contract. So that's the threat that's there. And the firm that you work for will probably take a decision like they did with Malefetsane, that we'd rather lose you than lose the contract. It's 10:30, time for Power News Headlines.
Power Talk with Aldrin St-Pierre, weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Power 98.7.
And we're in conversation with Julius Mujapilo, who is the CEO of the Institute of Internal Auditors South Africa. We also have Malefetsane Mohlokwane, who is practicing internal auditor and MD at DOD Governance Solutions Africa. We're also taking your calls on 0861-987-000, zooming in on the profession of internal auditors. And Julius, just to the point that was made earlier on by Malefetsane, and this is around the contracts, where you all constantly have this threat, almost like, what do they call it? Almost like a hammer that hangs over your head, that if you do not adhere to what your client is saying, including what your report found, your survey found, that almost one in five internal auditors have been intimidated or coerced into sweeping findings under the carpet over the last 3 years, while 3% were suspended or put on paid or special leave while investigating corruption, that if you do not do what the client says you must do, including sweeping things under the carpet, you would lose your contract.
Definitely. And that brings us back to that issue of the independence of the structure to which you report. It is supposed to be the audit committee's role to protect the internal auditor, because the internal auditor serves at the pleasure of the audit committee. Mm-hmm. They are an instrument used by the audit committee to say, has the audit committee how do I know that things
Is this
are
the company's
the
audit committee or the client's?
This is the company's audit committee. This is at the company that appointed you has an audit committee. They are the ones that appointed the internal auditor.
Mm-hmm.
They said internal auditors come in and look at this organization and give us assurance as the audit committee that management is actually running this business the way the board has approved. And now, if the internal auditor gets findings and they report them to the audit committee, but the audit committee is not independent enough, the internal auditor now becomes a target because now you have to remove the internal auditor so that the findings don't come up. So now, instead of having the audit committee, if you don't have an independent audit committee, instead of it being an assurance structure to being responsible for overseeing assurance, they become the structure that blocks findings from getting out of the organization. And currently, the way the audit committees are appointed in South Africa, you don't have the system is that the people that appoint the audit committees could easily have an interest in appointing management and also making sure that the management they appointed is not exposed by internal audit. And that is why internal the environment we have currently where we don't really have a sure system of independence at audit committee level creates a very dangerous environment for internal auditors to be able to operate. Because they are supposed to rely fully on the audit committee to protect them, to guide them. But at this point, do we have the internal the audit committee that is firstly independent enough and secondly competent enough?
Yeah.
We don't have minimum competency levels for people to sit on audit committees in South Africa. As much as a lot of organizations have their own criteria for appointing people on the audit committee, there is still a loophole that you could easily still be able to reward comrades by putting them on audit committees. Because you just have to prove that they are not related to the entity and hence they meet the independence theoretically. They meet
and what about qualification?
There is no qualifications for being on the audit committee.
What?
None. Anyone can sit on the audit committee. Now, and you have that person that's supposed to be overseeing a qualified internal auditor and be able to support them in ensuring that their findings are implemented. We need those things legislated. We can't have them as, you know, pockets of excellence where certain organizations have got high criteria for making audit committee members and then others have no criteria for having audit committee members.
Yeah.
So we have to work very hard on creating that structure that can oversee internal audit. And if needs be, let's take that structure outside of the organization so that it can be fully independent. So that the organization doesn't appoint the audit committee. Currently, the organization appoints the audit committee that's supposed to oversee the internal audit that's auditing them. The environment is not ripe enough. So as the institute, that's where we want to focus our attention to say, let's fix the oversight structure as this relates to audit committees, and our internal auditors will be able to do their job without fear, without intimidation.
Okay, Malifatsane, your take on that?
Yeah, look, there's just a couple of points that I would like to make. I think in as much as legislation does not outline requirements to serve on audit committees, I can say the National Treasury and the Provincial Treasuries have tried to come up with a framework, you know, that, that ensures that people with at least a certain and minimum level of qualifications do you know get appointed to audit committees. However, you know, if we don't have a change in legislation, such as the requirement that the audit committee must report to the accounting officer, you know, the accounting officer who happens to be the person upon whom the audit committee must be playing oversight, you are definitely going to have a problem. You know, if you look at regulation 3.1.12, it says the audit committee must report and make recommendations to the audit to the accounting officer. Yes, there has been, you know, attempts in the past to try and elevate the status of the audit committee to make sure that it reports to, you know, the executive authority, the MEC at the provincial level or the minister. But the people that are doing so forcing things actually in contravention of what, you know, the regulations require, in contravention of what the Act requires. I think what needs to happen, you know, Alvin, is we need to have a change in our laws and regulations, right? I agree with, you know, Julius with respect to the manner in which audit committees are, you know, appointed. And you know, by the manner, I'm referring to the fact that the person who's got to ultimately have a sign-off on the audit committee that has been appointed, you know, ultimately the regulations require that it be the accounting officer. And now remember, the accounting officer is the person that the chief audit executive or internal auditors you know, must be able to go and report to the audit committee if they feel that this person is actually not doing things, you know, okay. All right. So we need to have a change in legislation. That's the first thing that we need to have. And once we have changed legislation, I also need to address something. I hear that, you know, there is this understanding that internal audit was designed so that it can be within an organization. Let me just correct that.
Mm-hmm.
When internal audit started as a profession, that was the intention. But, you know, around 2000, the standard moved away from actually even talking about an internal audit function. If you look at the internal auditing standards now, they are talking about internal audit services and internal audit activity.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was recognition of the fact that it can be provided by people who are either inside the organization or outside the organization. Aldrin, let's not fool ourselves here. You know, we are working with human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And now, let me tell you, it doesn't matter whether it's in the public sector or the private sector. If you actually go, I'm someone who actually works across the different, you know, sectors and industries. You'll be shocked to find that internal auditors in the public sector are actually more skillful than the guys that are operating in the private sector. And with all those structures in place, the board of directors that is there, the audit committee that is independently, you know, appointed, you still have constraints, even in the private sector, where internal auditors are still not able to voice out, you know, their concerns with respect to certain things,
mm-hmm.
where they are unable to flex their muscles as much as they would want to.
As we've seen with Steinhoff as well.
Exactly. Steinhoff, that is not the only case.
Mm.
How many scandals can you point to in South Africa, Alden? Let's talk about the price in fixing, you know, the price fixing syndicate.
Yeah.
You know, in the bread
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm. and the construction cartel.
Those organizations did not have internal auditors.
Yeah.
I don't want us to come here and give some glorified stories of, you know, the environment in which internal audit operate. And we should also not be very narrow-minded when we are thinking about solutions as to how we can resolve the challenges. We need to come up with innovative ways. Those that will ensure that while this young professional or this experienced professional who has done so much to make sure that they get qualified and they are able to put bread on the table while doing on a day-to-day basis that which they love to do, their lives are safe.
Mm-hmm.
That
okay.
is very much important for people to understand.
Okay, let's go to the power line 0619870000. We'll read some of your tweets at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also you can tweet at PowerFM987. Mulahlekhe, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call. You know, I agree the issue of objectivity as well as independence within the audit profession is very key. However, if you can't, you know, avoid the issue of interference as well as intimidation. Simply because, you know, some of the work or the finding that, you know, we put in through to management, there might be, you know, people, they might cause people to lose their jobs. So the issue of interference as well as intimidation will always be there. But I fully agree with Malfezana that, you know, we need to move out of the internal audit out of the government departments to ensure the issue of objectivity as well as independence. We need to move it to the National Treasury. Let the National Treasury, you know, assign auditors to different departments, you know, and rotate them on 3-year basis. Because we're having a problem as a current...
Oh, proximity is a problem as well, yeah?
Yes. I'm an internal auditor, but I'm having a problem with the issue of objectivity and independence because in terms of the auditing standards, before you even, you know, you can finalize your audit scope, you need to get an approval from the management. So that's where the problem starts, meaning that, you know, if, for example, you are heading, you know, let's say the supply chain management, and you know that there have been some act of irregularities within that, you know, a tender section, you can, you know, refuse to accept, you know, the internal audit to come and conduct their work. You're allowed to do so because the standard says before I can even start auditing, I must get an approval from management as well as the audit committee. So the issue of independence and objectivity, it gets compromised at the initial stage of auditing.
Mm-hmm.
So we're having, you know, some serious problem. You just end up, you know, you know, just doing the job for the sake of doing it. But truly speaking, objectivity and independence is impaired. I agree with Malfezane. Let's move auditing to National Treasury. Let the National Treasury assign auditors to different departments, rotate them on 3-year basis.
Okay. Prince, good morning.
Good day, Adrian, and to your guests. I don't come from an auditing environment. However, my suggestion is this. One, is it not possible for... In fact, I was actually considering it from an external audit perspective, but I think it would apply even in this instance. If, for example, auditors, as they are assigned to different departments, there was record for... an external record somewhere that the public can gain access to indicate that this department or sub-department is being audited by such and such a company and on what standards each year. The reason why I'm saying that is, for amongst other things, I've listened to your guests, they're referring to audit committees that actually have such a major influence on things.
Yeah.
However, they are not accountable to the public. Now, if that were moved a bit further, where the public has access to, one, who was auditing and who these audit committees are, then the public is able to then, when we get reports indicating that departments and companies are actually not performing...
Don't you think that they themselves also should be, I don't know, have some sort of qualification? You know, like, it's just a minimum requirement.
Look, even when with your qualified people, you do get people that are wayward. I agree with them being qualified to some extent, because then you can tie them up to some fiduciary
and
stuff like that. However, even that, if we're not tying it to these people being exposed to the public, for us to be able to say, right, next time we know that we cannot select Prince to a committee because he was together with a committee of people that did not perform as such and such a department. Those things need to be in the public, at least I think. It would reduce somewhat this allegiance to party or to individuals that can give patronage.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Julius, your take on that?
Yeah, no, thanks. And I think that we're actually having discussion about the same thing. And I think with the word internal, we're basically saying internal doesn't mean the organization. Internal means government. You know, and if we say we want to move internal audit to province or that, so it means we just broaden the scope of government and say, when we say internal audit, we mean at a provincial level or we mean at a national level. But the goal is always to just strengthen the independence of the oversight structure, because we want to make sure that even when Treasury gets involved in the appointment and allocation of the internal auditors, they still have to effectively report to the audit committee. So the audit committee still has to be happy with the kind of work they are doing. They still have to approve the work that needs to be done by internal audit. So I fully agree that at this point, it might end up being that it's better for us to take internal audit outside of the organization. But that has to be in the context of discussing enhancing independence of the oversight structure and protecting the lives of the internal auditors that are involved in this engagement.
What do you think about that idea from Mulatlegi about moving it to Treasury and rotating every 3 years?
I think administratively that's a very good one, but Treasury can't be the place where the findings are reported. So the Treasury can play the administrative function of allocating internal auditors, but somebody has to take the responsibility for the oversight, for the findings that come out of internal audit. And that still will still remain the audit committee. So definitely something that should be discussed in the context of creating a better environment.
Okay, Malifatsane, when we come back, we'll get your views on some of the calls that we received. And Rapulani, then we'll take your call.
Tweet Eldrin at Eldrin Sampier.
And there's a tweet here from DXMXOW. Sure, handles are difficult, guys. But the point that he or she raises is, please ask your guest, what do the regulations mean when they say a member of the audit committee should be financially literate? Is that not a qualification requirement, Malifetsane?
Look, that is not necessarily a qualification requirement, Alden. Understand that there is a difference between a qualification and a professional designation. So as someone who has studied a BCom degree may claim to actually have, you know, financial literacy, whereas this person does not have maybe a CA qualification, a CIA qualification, or any of the qualifications that, you know, or actually designations that are required that demonstrate, you know, the technical prowess and experience in a chosen profession. However, as I've mentioned, the practice, I think we also need to give, you know, credit where it's due. If you can, you know, obtain advertisements that, you know, have been issued out by, I'll take the Free State Provincial, you know, Treasury, for instance, and many other departments, you will realize that they do outline that we want the CASA, we want the CIA, we want the CFE, you know, they outline those qualifications. That is actually not a problem, Alden. The problem is, who is your boss as a member of that audit committee? The person who's actually supposed to become your subordinate is actually is your boss. As I'm saying, well, I chair a couple of these audit committees, and my practice is that I have made it clear from the get-go that I'm not going to be reporting to the accounting officer. I hold the accounting officer accountable. You know, I will report to the MEC, but are you aware that by me insisting on going that route, I'm actually violating the regulations? Because the regulations are saying I must actually report to the accounting officer. Mm-hmm. But this person is my subordinate. So there's just a couple of things that need to change. One, I still do not understand why you will just have one regulation or just a few regulations in treasury regulations that make reference to internal audit, whereas external auditors have got their whole Public Audit Act. And you are expecting this profession to be protected. You are expecting these people to be independent and objective. When they are working under the source of pressure they have, they don't have a full-scale, you know, a body of legislation exclusively designed to direct their activities. There were improvements made just recently on the Public Audit Act, giving them even more power. Why are you not doing the same thing with internal audit if you are really, really serious? And I would like to hear the Institute of Internal Auditors, you know, my CEO there, trying to push for conversations that say, you know, we need to have your equivalent of the Public Audit Act for internal auditors, right? And it is in that framework where maybe you could also address the aspect of the oversight structures that are serving, that are supposed to actually be protecting these internal auditors and external auditors alike. So it is something that requires a holistic change in how legislation has been crafted. Mm-hmm. And the IIA needs to play a very pivotal role in making sure that, you know, they start conversations in this area.
Okay, I'm actually going to raise that point now. Rabulani, good morning.
Morning, Aldrin. A bit of a disclaimer, I'm not in that profession.
Okay.
But I've been exposed to a bit of it. You know, I think it's quite interesting that the IIA, or the gentleman from the IIA, is talking about the qualifications of audit committees. And is silent, at least in this conversation now, on the qualification of an internal auditor. What is an internal auditor? I can safely say to you, Aldrin, all you need to be an internal auditor is to be literate and nothing else. There is no particular qualification that a person needs to have. There is no real skill that is a requirement for a person to be an internal auditor. You know, it's just about anything goes. Two, people talk of independence, and when they talk of independence of internal auditors, you know, they're talking of removing it out of the department, maybe in Treasury, wherever. One, forgetting that, or in fact, one of the reasons, the justifications for that is that internal auditors get killed or get threatened.
Yeah.
External auditors get killed, get threatened as well. So being outside a department does not guarantee you any safety, does not buy you any safety. But secondly, they also forget that the role of internal audit is primarily to assist the accounting officer. You know, so if you are that distant from the accounting officer, how then are you going to assist the accounting officer?
Okay. Unfortunately, we run out of time, but Julius, I'll get you to respond to that. And also responding to this tweet here, Lebohang saying that I agree that auditors are in immense danger. However, the Institute of Internal Auditors is also part of the problem. It continues to grant membership status to auditors, especially chief audit executives who have been found to be in the wrong. Julius?
Yeah, thank you. I think let me start with the last one. I'm really not sure about the basis of such a big allegation, so I would really want to hear more facts on that one. I don't think we have any member we declare in good standing is definitely in good standing. It means they have not been gone through the disciplinary and been found guilty of anything, so that one I'll definitely deny fully to say there is no such. And then on the qualifications of internal auditors, this is really a big issue. In the public sector, one of the work we have in the legislation review is around looking at having minimum competency levels for internal auditors in the public service, to say you have minimum competency levels for people like the chief finance officers, for the head of procurement, but you don't have minimum competency levels for internal auditors. And that creates a problem, because then it means anyone can become an internal auditor, can be appointed as an internal auditor. Although some organizations have the minimum competency level. So
Rapulan is right when he says anything goes.
No, he's right. He's right at that point. That is one of the legislative propositions that we are busy working on as the Institute, to make sure that we end up having minimum competency levels in legislation for internal audit in South Africa. The other challenge we need to look at is around the independence of the internal audit activity. We still need to go back and empower the audit committee, because that is where we report effectively as internal auditors. And that connection must never be lost. We must never look at internal audit as something that could ever exist on its own, because it's giving assurance through a structure that is called audit committee. And I must fully agree with Malefesan that we need to look at creating an entire chapter or a legislation on internal audit instead of just enhancing the paragraphs that are sitting there in the current legislation. Mm-hmm. The last point I want to make is that private sector has failed internal audit dismally, because if you look at the Companies Act itself, such a big legislation, such a big document in South Africa from an economic perspective, does not appreciate the role and value of internal audit. That is why the private sector situation is actually worse than the public sector situation when it comes to internal audit, because internal auditors in private sector, unless the entity is a financial services, is listed and is required to comply with King, that organization does not even have to engage in internal audit.
Sure. Okay. Julius, unfortunately, we've run out of time. We need to go to news, but I think this is a conversation that we can visit again and include the independent regulatory body to be part of that conversation, because there are some issues that have been raised, and for me, specifically around KPMG and how, for instance, the Minister of Finance, Tito Mboweni, allegedly got involved when the IRBA decided to suspend the license, or said it would suspend the operating license of KPMG, and the Minister of Finance, Tito Mboweni, got involved and it was never suspended. It's a minute after 11 o'clock, time for Power News.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.